Washington Heights.
Okay. Okay. Now, in the film, was the film called The Five Heartbeats? There was a scene, a couple of scenes. That one was a scene where the singers drove back into the neighborhood. Everybody had a car. You remember that scene?
Yes, I do.
And there was another scene where they were traveling in the South, and they were pulled over by some good old boys and forced to get out of the car, since it was a group of black guys in the car, carload of black folks. These white sheriffs and these good old boys, the Proud Boys, they made them get out of the car and prove that they were singers and have them sing along the side of the road. Now, as I remember, those two scenes were actually based on some real experiences. Is that right?
Yes. The movie is called The Five Heartbeats, but the story and the musical consultants on the film were the Dells. Mm-hmm. That actually happened to the Dells.
Where they were forced out of the car.
Where are you going? What are you doing? Well, we're singers. Prove it. They made them get out of the car and sing on the street.
Mm. Now, what about the people driving back into the neighborhood in cars? Did that happen?
Well, I'm from Harlem myself, and even the teenagers from the upper part, Sugar Hill, Washington Heights, we rode the subway. We didn't have any cars. Even the Imperials in Brooklyn, they were on the F train. Mm-hmm. They didn't have cars. We had no cars in those days.
Or driver's license. It was 13, 14 years old.
That's right. No driver's licenses.
Yeah.
Wow. No.
Let me just come back to for a minute. What, say it again?
We rode the crosstown bus.
Right. Indeed, indeed. Come back for just a minute to the cover songs. The some of those white artists, they built their careers. I don't know if you can say they built their entire career, but they had some major success with songs that by black artists. Janis Joplin had major success with Take a Little Piece of My Heart, which was done originally by Irma Franklin, Aretha's sister.
Right.
And when they covered it, they sang it exactly the way the black artists sang it. Now, Peggy Lee, Peggy Lee's known for Fever. That's like her signature song.
Right.
It was a major song in moving her career forward, and it became her song. But she heard it first from this brother, Little Willie John. Bring it, Sean.
Give me fever when you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight, fever in the morning, fever all through the night. Listen to me, baby, hear every word I say. No one can love you the way I do, 'cause they don't know. Give me fever when you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight, fever in the morning and fever all through the night. Bless my soul, I love you. Take this heart away. Take these arms I'll never use, and just believe.
Let me say again, this is WBAI 99.5 here in New York City. Bobby J is with us, and I'm Bob Law. We're talking about understanding the historical legacy of the music, where we came from, where we started. If you consider where we started, then you can look at where we are now in terms of popular music and the music that is being played on the air, on music stations, the music that young performers, particularly Black performers, are being encouraged to record and perform now. Just consider that and look back at this and look at where we have come from, look at what this music meant. And again, as I say, the children, the kids who sang this music understood that it was their mission to help envision a newer and better reality rather than reflect whatever negative realities were part of their environment. They were not trapped by their environment. They had a vision of a better reality, and their music addressed that vision. We talked about how this music had immediate crossover appeal. It was being accepted and appreciated and applauded by Blacks and whites. It was being performed by Blacks and whites. The Diamonds, Bobby J, the Diamonds were a white group, is that right?
From Canada.
From where?
Canada.
From Canada.
They were Canadian. David Somerville was the lead singer. He was a good friend of mine. And whatever, you know, when Why the Fools Can't Fall in Love came out, they jumped right on the Nip Sip, the Clovers, the Diamonds jumped right on it.
Now,
and they built a whole career.
Yeah. Wow. But everybody bought the music, though. White audiences bought it. Black audiences bought it. It wasn't crossover. It had immediate universal appeal.
Yes. Yes. It was about the music. It wasn't about anything political or anything racially motivated. It was the music. It had to be good. Otherwise, you weren't going to go out and buy it.
Yeah. And they did indeed buy it. And it helped to create a marketplace. Understand that it created a marketplace. There was no such thing as a teen market until these teenagers started to demonstrate their talent and their willingness to support their own product.
Yeah.
And it's important to understand this gave birth to what has become the music industry. There was no music industry. There was no concert promoters. There was no record promoters. There was no music industry. And then these teenagers, not just Frankie Lyman, but his brother as well, Jimmy Castor.
The literal teenagers.
Everybody. They planted the seeds. They laid the foundation.
Right.
And others came after them to reap what the... these young people created, reaped the fruits of what they planted. They didn't get paid. Didn't get paid really what they were entitled to
earned.
Because they didn't know what they were entitled to.
Right. Could I inject one thing, though? We were talking about covers. I was very good friends with Laverne Baker, who told me she was playing the Apollo Theater. She had a big record called Tweedly D. And she said she's on stage. And she looked out into the audience, and there was this white guy with music manuscript paper, and while she's singing, he's writing. And she's looking, what is he doing? Well, he wrote down the song, wrote all the notes, went downtown, gave it to a lady named Georgia Gibbs. We called her Her Nibs, Miss Georgia Gibbs. Georgia Gibbs covered Tweedly D and went right to the top of the chart. Outsold Laverne Baker.
And one of the reasons that she outsold Laverne Baker is that she had a lot more outlets. There were radio stations that would play her song, would not play the same song by Laverne Baker. That was prior to 24-hour Black music radio.
Right. And they were on major labels at that time. Decca, Columbia, you know, and the records, the music that we were making were on small independent companies, small independent labels, who didn't have money to promote.
Didn't have the distribution at all. Couldn't get the record on the radio station anyway, even if they did.
Right.
You know, these are the children, these teenagers who created this industry. And as we said, this music, what was so attractive about this music is its universal appeal. We talked about the group from Canada. Listen to this Little Darling by the Diamonds. And I didn't realize that the Diamonds were from Canada. Sean, bring it. There were a number of songs that had that kind of talking break in there where the performer...
That's a cover record. Originally done by the Gladiolas.
Mm. Another cover record.
Another cover record.
Mm-hmm. My. Boy. Let me just come back again. Let me just say this. Myron from Brooklyn has pledged. So we'll give Fort Greene credit for Myron from Brooklyn. Paul Dingoes from New Jersey and Ronald from Corona. Thank you, brothers. Thank you for your call. Thank you for pledging your $75 or more. And in return, we're going to send you the Encyclopedia of Doo-Wop Volume 1. It's a 4-CD set. Got plenty of music. It's got a whole lot more music than we could possibly play here today. And we'll make sure that you get this music so that you can listen to it all summer long. And like I say, you ought to introduce it to your children and your grandchildren. They are particularly grandchildren. You've got grandchildren who don't know what four-part harmony is. They don't know what music is. And so help them. Gustavo and Beverly from Jamaica, thank you for your pledge. Thank you so much for pledging. So I need you to call right now. We'll take the 16th caller from Queens. We'll take 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950, a $75 pledge. And you would get a copy of the Encyclopedia of Doo-Wop. A 4-CD set. It's got so much music on here that you can continue to listen to and enjoy this music. Let me just again. There was another era. You know, we talk about all these groups and these love songs. Then there were also the girl groups. Can you talk a little bit about the girl groups?
Well, the girl groups. They looked at the success of the boy groups, and. There, you know, you can go back to the Andrews sisters in the 40s and into the 50s. A group called the Cookies. They were picked up by Ray Charles because they were on the same label, Atlantic Records. He made them the Ray Letts.
Mm.
And then you had from the Bronx, the Chantels with angelic voices. And they still have those angelic voices. And then you had from Passaic, New Jersey, the Shirelles, who looked at the success of the Chantels and said, wow, this is something we could do. Mm-hmm. And then from Spanish Harlem came the Ronettes.
Mm.
And Ronnie Spector, who unfortunately passed away last month, Frankie Lyman, was the love of her life. She patterned herself after Frankie Lyman. And then in Detroit, you had the Supremes, who was looking at the teenagers. Why do fools fall in love? Because in 1981, their lead singer, Diana Ross, had another big hit record with her version of Why Do Fools Fall in Love. So it's all related.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The Chantels, the Shirelles. Yeah. Let me give you an idea of what that sounded like. The Chantels. How many people remember this song? And when you hear this song, I want you to think about who were you with then? When you were 14 years old, maybe you were 16 years old. Who, not just your romantic, the romance in your life at the time, but yeah, think about that. But also your running buddies, your partners. Where were y'all hanging out? And when this song was on the charts, here's the Chantels. Hit it. Bring it, Sean. That's the Shirelles.
Yes.
And this is dedicated to the one I love. The song by the Chantels is Maybe. See if we can find that and share that with you as well. But as we say, that preceded, the Shirelles preceded the Supremes. And yes. And the Shirelles turned out hit after hit. And prior to the Shirelles, Bobby, you point out it was the Chantels.
Yes. The Chantels from the Bronx. There's a street named after them in the Bronx.
Say it again.
There's a street named after the Chantels in the Bronx.
Is that right?
That's right.
At the time that they were singing, it was not even on the radar screen that a street would be named after them.
That's right.
It was not even a possibility at that time. They had no idea. We didn't even know you could get streets named after people. I don't know if Sean, if you were able to. Okay, good. Let me share, as we promised, let me share the Chantels. Maybe. Yeah. Sean. It is cold outside, so move it a little bit closer to your radio. Get a warm beverage. Stay with me. We've got some more music. We're moving toward the bottom of the hour. We're going to try to get in as much music as we can. And I want to thank everybody who's been calling in. For the folks who are calling in, making their pledge, you really are going to enjoy this encyclopedia of doo-wop. This is a 4-CD set that has a lot, has so much of the music, and even this 4-CD set can't contain all the music. But there's so much music, but there's a lot on this CD that will help you enjoy the whole summer. You know, and as I say, introduce this music to your children, and particularly those of you who are old enough to have grandchildren. If you are old enough to have some grandchildren, then you've got some young people who don't even know what music is. Play this music, but play it for yourself and think about who were you with back then when you were 16 years old and the Chantels are talking about Maybe. And Bobby J, when you listen to that the lead singer, you hear that voice. I mean, that was some remarkable talent. And as we said earlier, these are people who did not necessarily go to music school or take music lessons. It was just a natural talent.
Right. That was Arlene Smith. Great voice.
Arlene Smith.
Yes.
And now, where were the Chantels from?
The Bronx.
They were from the Bronx. I think we just got a caller from the Bronx, too, or someone who from the Bronx who just pledged they have $75. You can pledge $75 or more if you like. We'll take a little bit more if it is at all possible. There's Frank Al Hakim from Bayshore, and then there's Marvin Dendy from New Hyde Park, and Daniel from Rosedale. Lacey from Harlem says that she from the streets is Bob Law with Bob Law is her favorite program. Go ahead, Lacey. And from Corona, there's Ron from Corona, and there's Ron from Brooklyn, and then there's Yvonne for a $200 pledge from Brooklyn. Thank you, Yvonne. That kind of pledge helps to lift our spirits here, helps to encourage us to want to stay here and create programming. And keep in mind, again, this is programming that you can't get anywhere else, not in New York City, not on the talk shows, not on the music stations, particularly not on the music stations. They would be afraid to take any risk and venture out and explore the music the way we're able to do here. So it is important that we keep this station alive. You can call. Did I give you the number lately? We'll take calls right now. 212-209-2950. I'm Bob Law. With me is Bobby J, the legendary Bobby J. As I said earlier, Bobby J is a national treasure. He really is. And he is a griot in the truest sense of the word. He lives the music, he experiences it, and he shares that experience. This is not from research or observing anybody else. He's the person that people come to if they want to do a book. And I'm through twisting his arm to do the book.
Mm-hmm. But, I hear you.
Yeah, you hear good. Everybody else who wants to do a book, in order to make their book authentic, they go talk to Bobby J. And we have an opportunity to talk with Bobby J right now, and I greatly appreciate that. Let's talk quickly about the classic doo-wop. We mentioned earlier the Dells. Now, yes. What happened to the Dells while they were traveling through the South, the American South, and they were pulled over by some good old boys, sheriffs, policemen, forced to get out of the car and sing to prove that they were really singers. And of course, those good old boys didn't really need proof. They just took any opportunity they could to humiliate some black people. Mm-hmm. But as it turned out, the group that they stopped really were the Dells, who really could sing. And they produced some classic music. I want to share some of that with you. All right. And we'll talk a little bit about the Dells. The lead singer of the Dells, what was his name?
Marvin Jr.
I was telling some folks in Detroit about him. If you listen carefully to the Dells, you can hear the seeds that were planted that produce people like Teddy Pendergrass. If you hear Marvin Jr. and you hear Teddy Pendergrass, you say, that's where it came from. Marvin Jr. and the Dells.
Marvin, I did an interview at WWRO with them, which I'm going to broadcast on my internet show in a couple of months or so. But I said that to Marvin. Marvin said, he said that's Teddy Pendergrass. That's my son.
He certainly sounds like it. Just before the Dells, tell us about your internet show. How can people hear you?
Well, I'm on BossJockRadio.com. It's on Sunday nights, 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And I just have a ball because I do what I want to do, and I play what I want to play, and I cover the entire spectrum. So that's Bobby J's Great Soul Performances, BossJockRadio.com, 7 to 9 p.m. Sunday nights.
BossJockRadio.com.
Right.
Just go online. Boss, you're saying Boss, B-O-S-S, Boss.
Right. BossJockRadio.com.
I'm sorry, we were saying it at the same time. You say it again one more time.
BossJockRadio.com.
And it's on Sunday night. You can listen to Bobby J and hear the music. Continue to hear and enjoy this music. We talked about...
And in fact, let me just jump in there. If you listen tomorrow night, you're going to hear people that we were just talking about. Ralph Cooper, WHOM in New York, and from WINS 1010 Winds, Alan Freed. I'm saluting those two disc jockeys tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm. I want to come back in a minute and see if we can talk a little bit more about some of those disc jockeys. But here, let me share with you the Dells. Bring it, Sean.
Squeeze you deep. That's why I
Sean, I don't know if you can still hear me. My chat box is doesn't seem to be working all of a sudden. I don't know how to put it back. put it back online. But if you can, let's see if we can't fix this right on the spot. Bobby J, are you with me?
That song still gets to me. In the key of G. Oh, what a night.
So, Sean, if you can hear me, we have our, you know, we have our own formula for how long we're going to play the music. So we have to go back to the formula. Don't wait for me.
Okay.
All right. Okay, good. I don't know what's happening on my screen, but it is, as they say nowadays, it is what it is. Classic doo-wop. And we're going to play a little bit more of that by songs by the Dells. And in a minute, you'll hear the Teddy Pendergrass all up in the music that Marvin Jr. Before there was a Teddy Pendergrass, there was a Marvin Jr. Indeed.
Right.
I want to thank a lot of people. People are calling. I can't get to all. I don't know what's going on with my phones and things now. I can't get to everybody. Sandra Ramos says that she was in reform school listening to my show. So she's talking about Night Talk. If she was in reform school listening to my show, he was listening to me on Night Talk at WWRL here in New York. And she now runs a battered shelter for women. And she says, thank you, Bob. And Sandra, thank you so much. Thank you for the work that you are doing and providing a service, a much needed service in this community. And she's from Ringwood, New Jersey. David Brinkley. And he's from Plainfield, New Jersey. Carol Riley from Amityville. Was anybody, were there any doo-wop groups from Amityville, from Long Island? I know Ken Webb, who was
that's where Kenny's from.
Jockey at WBLS and for a short time at WWRL. He's from Amityville. I think he said he had a group back there.
I don't know about that. I don't know about that. Yeah, call him up over on SiriusXM, but I doubt it.
Mm-hmm. Now, and also from Princeton, this I think is Getal from Princeton donated. He pledged $100 for a pledge of $75 or more. And thank you. Thank you for your pledge of $100. Thank you for everybody who was calling in trying to get their pledge in while we are still on the air. Thank you so much. And you really are going to enjoy this encyclopedia of doo-wop. It's got so much music that helps you to it'll help you relive the magic and relive some of the best memories of your life. And they really were. It is the 50s has been called an innocent time, but there was a great deal of I started moving papers around. Y'all don't want me to move the papers, right? But the 50s, the 50s was called an innocent time. But when you listen to this music, you understand a code of behavior and a set of values that were being developed and promoted through the music and helping to nurture a much healthier community in spite of unemployment, violence. There was gang banging back in the 50s. But in spite of all of that, this music taught us to love each other, taught us to embrace each other. And it's important to understand that is the part of the significant legacy of this music. And it was being created by children. They were 13, 14, 15 years old. These were kids creating this music, writing these songs, arranging these songs. And then came Bobby J. It seems to me that when it began, it was like, how many instruments? It was a cappella, and then it was very few people, even in the, not very few people, there was a cappella, there were very few instruments, and then some of that began to change, however. The music, yeah. It seemed like the music kind of expanded and yeah. It was being taken more, it sounds like it was being taken more seriously by the record companies. And so you get, you know, can we talk about what triggered that?
Well, first of all, you got to remember, when we were young kids and we were recording, we recorded with a rhythm section, piano, bass, drums, guitar, and usually a tenor saxophone. That was it. So the voices had to be there. You know, when you talk about a cappella, we sung a cappella when we used to rehearse because we didn't have, you know, we didn't have musicians around us. But later on, thanks to groups like the Persuasions, people began to understand and appreciate a cappella singing. But as we move from when I first started recording, it was a single track. It was just one track. And then we went three tracks, where they'd have the lead singer on one track, the background vocals on another one, and the whole band on the third track. Then when multi-track came along, they said, oh, you know, we're 8-track and then 16-track and then 24-track. Let's fill up the tracks. And then they started putting in the strings and the flutes and the congas, and you know. And then the emphasis was less on the vocals.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. The platters. Can the platters in that category?
Well, the platters came along almost simultaneously with the teenagers. However, the platters were older. They were in their early 20s, early to mid-20s, and they were singing more sweet love songs, and they could play in the club. They could play in the Copacabana-type venues. And they went all over the world, too.
Here's an example.
Mercury Records with bigger budgets. A guy named Buck Ram, who was their, you know, their Svengali, their manager. He wrote most of the songs. He formed a corporation for the platters, of which he was, of course, the principal owner. And if anybody left the platters, he would buy them out. And, you know, it was
a lot of funny stuff going on.
Yeah. Everybody, you know, it was a lot of creative accounting.
Yep.
Companies had three sets of books.
Now, in the audience, we had no idea of all of those things that were going on. All we knew, as well as the performers, all we knew was the music. And what the music said, what the music made you feel. The planters. Here's the, I guess one of the, well, I don't know if you can say their biggest hit, but they had some, they had a number of really significant hits.
This one
is also a song that a lot of other artists have performed, but this is the Platters. Who were you with when the Platters did The Great Pretender? Bring it, Sean. Law, Bobby J is with me. This is WBAI 99.5 FM in the city. We're looking at this celebration of Black History Month, and we're looking back at the history of doo-wop, history of the music in this, the beginnings of the teen market, the beginnings of the record, what is now the record industry. And it was sparked. It really was sparked by these young kids from the street corners in New York City, street corners in Philadelphia. Bobby J, where did you perform And you know, you said the kids didn't know about making money from the records, but they did know about, they expected to make money in performances, but they were 14 and 15 years old. Mm-hmm. Was there much performing going on?
Oh, there was a lot. There was a lot. There were a lot of clubs. There was the, your VFW clubs and other places. But the goal, if you got a hit record, your goal was to play the world-famous Apollo Theater, where we did five and six shows a day.
Five and six shows a day.
That's right. That's right.
Now, do you remember how much you were getting paid then?
Very little. I remember when the Latins played the Apollo, I think we got $500 for the week.
Mm-hmm.
Six shows. Wow. Now you divide that up. Six shows a day, $500 for the week.
For the entire week, six shows a day.
Yeah.
Now, you know, back in the 50s, and one of the reasons people didn't realize that they were money was being stolen from them, you know, back in the 50s, adults had jobs making $50 a week.
Right.
Salaries of $45 and $50 a week. If you made $60 or $80 a week, that was considered a really good job.
Yeah.
And so if you got $500 a week, coming from a family where maybe your father was the head of the family, right, making $70 or $80 or even $50 a week. Right. That's one of the reasons people didn't understand that they were being beaten out of the money. That means we got to hurry.
Right. There's
some other music I wanted people to hear. There were some great songs. A Thousand Miles Away. That was the Heartbeats.
Yes.
And then we talked about Little Anthony, Tears on My Pillow, Little Anthony. And I'm going to see if I can put both of those together. Sean, let's do A Thousand Miles Away, and then we'll kind of segue into Tears on My Pillow, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit about that, all right? So, Sean, as James Brown would say, hit me, Sean.
You're a thousand miles away, but I still have your love to remember you by. Oh, my darling, dry your eyes. Daddy's coming home soon. My knees every day, all I do is pray, baby, just for you, hope you always want me to. Daddy's coming home soon. But no matter what the day is, I'm going to make it my business to get home soon. Your eyes, Daddy's coming home in my heart caused by you.
You.
If we could start anew, I wouldn't hesitate. I'd gladly take you.
So this, you know, Bobby J, those voices. That, those are remarkable voices. Look at this little Anthony from Fort Greene in Brooklyn. Remarkable, remarkable voices. And I wonder, how old was little Anthony then?
He would have been in 58 when he did that. He was about 17.
He was about 17. And you say he wrote that?
No, he didn't write that. He didn't write that one.
Okay. Yeah, because that is something, though. Alfred Gilman Bay from Brooklyn. So we give Alfred his pledge of $150, and we give that credit to little Anthony. But Brooklyn is, Fort Greene is close enough. In honor of little Anthony and the Imperials. And Joseph Fredericks from Staten Island. Thank you, Joseph, so much. George from Brooklyn. Thank you for your pledge. And you will receive a copy of the Encyclopedia of Doo-Wop. You're gonna love this 4-CD set. We really have to hurry. I'm about to run out of time. I'm not gonna be able to get to all the music. I want you to hear this though. I wanted you to hear The Love We Had by the Dells. But this song now. But instead of that, let me come here to Frankie Lymon again. And the song Goody Goody. That was what you talked about earlier about how the music was so powerful, or not just so powerful, but how the music began to change and had a bigger, bolder sound. The Goody Goody is an example of that, or was it Goody Goody that triggered that change?
Well, Goody Goody came along at the time. Now you got to put this in context. The entire career of Frankie Lymon and the Teenagers was 18 months.
Mm.
January 1956 through July 1957, it was over. The people at the record company decided, you know, Frankie Lymon is the star. You know, we need to put him out there by himself, and we'll see what we can do with the group, which they didn't. They didn't do much with the group. But then they began to give Frankie more adult-sounding material. With Rudy Traylor's orchestra, big band sound. The original Goody Goody was recorded by Frankie Lymon and the Teenagers, but by the time the record got out, they brought Frankie back from England into New York, re-recorded it, took the guys off, put on, I don't know, the Ray Charles singers or the Anita Kerr singers, and that's the story.
We're about to run out of time. I think I got to get out, Sean. I'm supposed to get out now, right? So to get out a few minutes earlier.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Edward, I don't know what I should leave with. We like to kind of leave on an upbeat. Well, no, I really want you to, well, I don't have time anyway. I want people to hear Marvin Jr. and The Love We Had stayed on our mind. And so we'll go with that. Bobby J, thank you so much. Thank you for helping us on this journey. Thank you so much. All right, now. And Sean, so I'm looking for, let's do The Dells and The Love We Had. We'll be back, and we'll come back to some conversations about what's going on in New York City politically. But just remember this, The Love We Had stays on our mind. Bring it, Sean.
and pretty girl. I've been remembering the good times that we used to share. My thoughts of you don't have an end. And memories of you are everywhere.
But why should I?
The love we had stays on my mind. Girl, if you were nearer, if you had a mirror, maybe you could count my tears. And if you were nearer, it would all be clearer. How I wish that you.
I'm in the middle of a social experiment to see whether it's possible to live in Manhattan and never leave my apartment.
One of the founders at WBAI of Freeform Radio, Larry Josephson, a Peabody Award-winning radio producer, pioneering Freeform Radio host, and a dad, Larry the J. He never planned to be a morning radio sensation.
I became kind of against the morning and also against all the other morning men at the time. They were all treacle, you know, hi-ho. At 5 a.m, they were happy and energetic, and I wasn't. I was often depressed or tired.
But he was a sensation.
It started to attract more and more people, all by word of mouth. And at some point, maybe in the first year, all kinds of many members of the intelligentsia, the culture vultures, the arts mavens, started listening to my show, and I would call in, and it became a hit.
Join us Sunday, December 4th at 1 p.m. at Symphony Space for a memorial celebration of the late, great Larry Josephson. You'll need to mask up. Symphony Space is at 95th Street and Broadway in Manhattan, or you can listen on the radio station where Larry first did his radio programs on WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, streaming also at WBAI.org. That's December 4th at 1 p.m. Symphony Space, or right here on your radio station.
Breathe.
From Brooklyn. I have no complaints on WBAI. I'm very happy with everything.
My name is Anthony. Is it possible to create an app? Would that help build up the base if someone could just put an app on their phone, click on it, and get to BAI like you can get to other radio stations?
This is Rose from Flemington, New Jersey. There are a lot of young people. Is there any way we can provide them with some college credit for volunteering? And it doesn't have to be on Atlantic Avenue. They can get together and do it remotely. Am I making any sense?
If you'd like to add your thoughts to the ongoing conversation regarding the work of the WBAI Local Station Board, then tune in Tuesday, December 6th from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. for the second report of 2022 from the WBAI Local Station Board. This month, you'll be introduced to various members of the board. They'll talk about their responsibilities, recent developments throughout the network, and ask you for your ideas on how to build a stronger WBAI. Please keep in mind, this is your chance to interact with the board members on the show, so don't let this opportunity pass you by. Again, that's Tuesday, December 6th, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., for the second report of 2022 from the WBAI Local Station Board, only on WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM.
Greetings and salutations. This is Giovanni Anglin.
And I'm Bastian Nissa, along with intern Mike. You could catch us live on Thursday from midnight to 2 a.m.
You know what, Bash? Our tagline is that this is the show about nothing, but it's more than that, right?
That's true. Our conversations could be political, but also comical. We're really just giving our point of view on how we see the world and how it affects us today.
So join us Thursdays at midnight, BAI listeners, only on 99.5 FM, WBAI New York.